नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। विस्मयोत्फुल्ल विलोचनो हरिम् सुतां विलोक्य नखदुन्दुभिस्तदा कृष्णावतारोत्सव संभ्रमो स्पृशन् मुदा द्विजेभ्यो युतम् आप्लुतो गवम् Vasudev saw his extraordinary son. His eyes were struck with wonder. In transcendental jubilation, he mentally collected 10,000 cows and distributed them among the Brahmins as a transcendental festival. Purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has analyzed the wonder of Vasudeva upon seeing his extraordinary child. Vasudeva was shivering with wonder to see a newborn child decorated so nicely with valuable garments and gems. He could immediately understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had appeared, not as an ordinary child, but in his original, fully decorated, four-handed form. The first wonder was that the Lord was not afraid to appear within the prison house of Kamsa, where Vasudeva and Devaki were interned. Second, although the Lord, the Supreme Transcendence, is all-pervading, he had appeared from the womb of Devaki. The third point of wonder, therefore, was that a child could take birth from the womb so nicely decorated. Fourth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was Vasudeva's worshipable deity, yet had taken birth as his son. For all these reasons, Vasudeva was transcendentally jubilant, and he wanted to perform a festival, as Kshatriyas do to celebrate the birth of a child. But because of his imprisonment, he was unable to do it externally, and therefore he performed the festival within his mind. This was just as good. If one cannot externally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can serve the Lord within one's mind. Since the activities of the mind are as good as those of other senses, this is called the non-dual or absolute situation, Advaya Gan. People generally perform ritualistic ceremonies for the birth of a child. Why then should Vasudeva not have performed such a ceremony when the Supreme Lord appeared as his son? Vasudeva, today we are reading from Canto 10 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 3, entitled The Birth of Lord Krishna. Text 11. I am sincerely grateful and extraordinarily happy to be back with all of you again. Thank you. In this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vasudev and Devaki at midnight, shackled with chains in a prison, are seeing the beautiful form of the Lord who appeared as their son. Vasudeva was a great prince with enormous wealth, beauty, knowledge. Yet, he and along with his wife Devaki, who was a transcendental divine personality in every way, were apparently condemned to live in a prison for many, many years. At least 7 or 8 years. And what did they do wrong? Vasudev was marrying Devaki with the blessings of the Brahmins, with the blessing of the Gurus, with the blessings of all the great Rishis, their parents, everyone. And according to tradition, he was simply taking her to his home. And this Kamsa, being the cousin brother of Devaki, he wanted to give his sister a feeling of confidence by personally driving her home. As Srila Prabhupada explains, when a young lady is, according to the traditional Vedic standard of how marriages were performed, a young lady lives with her parents and her friends. And after she marries, she moves to a whole new house, another village. So to help to minimize the feelings of separation, many friends are sent with her, and Kamsa wanted to drive her himself. And you all know the story, how that voice came from the sky and said that you're the 8th child of Devaki will be the cause of your death. Now, Vasudev didn't tell that voice to speak. What was his fault? Kamsa was so attached to his own life that he was about to kill his own sister, who perhaps more than any other person in the world he really had affection for. But he was willing to gruesomely sever her head with his sword on her marriage day in front of everyone. How shameless. And he was going to do it. It wasn't just a threat. And Vasudev started speaking very nice philosophy to Kamsa. If you're actually concerned with your own well-being, then don't you know that by committing this heinous deed, you are going to suffer miserably because the soul is eternal. Real culture, real knowledge is to understand that this body is a temporary situation and everything related to the body is a temporary situation. And the soul, according to its destiny, is forced to go from one body to another. just like a traveler. When traveler walks, it lifts up one foot to put down another. But in order to make progress, as your front foot hits the ground, your rear foot comes off the ground and has to leave behind wherever it was standing. So in the same way, the bodies are always changing, but the soul is forever. So real understanding, real knowledge, is to do what's best for the eternal soul. So if you commit this wicked deed of killing your own sister, you are going to have to suffer miserably. She's innocent. So don't do it, Kamsa, for your own sake, for the sake of Dharma, for the sake of your family. But when a person is infatuated by material obsession, oftentimes just can't hear. You could listen, but you can't hear. Just doesn't touch the heart. Distraction. Obsession is such a distraction. What was his obsession? For power. For all the things. The more he acquired, the more attached he was to his ego. So Vasudev, as an emergency measure, he had to somehow or other reach Kamsa's heart. Actually, this is what preaching is about. You have to reach somebody's heart, otherwise they don't change. And sometimes our preaching is planting seeds. But in this case, his need to reach Kamsa's heart was really an emergency. If he didn't reach him right then and there, his wife would have been slaughtered. Her head would have been rolling off the chariot onto the ground. Blood would have been gushing and covering everybody. Obviously. So somehow, he had to be effective in his preaching. He spoke philosophy. Philosophy's great, provide people hear it. Otherwise, it really has no value if you're just speaking for the sake of yourself. Vasudev could have gone down in history that I spoke the right philosophy. My wife's dead. Kamsa's going to hell. Krishna's not going to be born according to his arrangement. But I spoke the philosophy. And I didn't change anything. Of course, he didn't change anything. But he had to do what worked. He had to do what worked to serve the mission of Krishna. And therefore, he just came down to a really, really, the human level that Kamsa was on in order for Krishna to appear and deliver the world. He said, Kamsa, your sister's not the threat. Her children are the threat. I vow to you on this day, I will give you every one of her children and you can do anything you want with the child, but leave Devaki alone. Was what worked. Kamsa knew that whatever Vasudev speaks, he will never go back on his word of honor. This was his integrity. This was his character. Now, this was an incredible thing. Kamsa trusted Vasudev that much. If Vasudev didn't do what he was saying he was going to do, Kamsa knew that he would be killed by one of the children of Devaki. He was willing, Kamsa was willing to put his life on the line due to his trust in the character
of Vasudev. Vasudev was really a good preacher.
And we have to understand what gave his preaching the power to protect Krishna, to assist Krishna in his mission in this way, was his character. Because what he said wouldn't have worked unless Kamsa had faith in him. Now, when any of us are trying to give people Krishna, in one sense, we're trying to get them to give up their Kamsa-like propensities. Attachment to the ego, to lust, to envy, to greed, to pride, to anger. We're telling people, basically, when we're giving them Krishna consciousness, give all these things up. Give up your attachment and your obsessions to all the things that you are so much addicted to in this world, so that Krishna can appear within your heart. So in one sense, whether we're distributing books, whether we're speaking to people, we are in the role of Vasudev speaking to Kamsa. Now, they may be nice Kamsas. They may be pious Kamsas. But the reality is, the same obsession, maybe in a very different, there's the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Kamsa was really in the modes of ignorance and passion, to an extreme. But still, in order to get people to really hear, people have to trust us. People have to see that our character is worthy of listening to us and worthy of receiving that knowledge and worthy of actually making a change. That's why Srila Prabhupada said, philosophy without good character is practically useless. It's practically useless from the one who's speaking it and for the and to try to give it to somebody else. So Kamsa said yes. And I guess he took them to their house. And then everything was kind of going on like usual. No problem. Now, if we were not such surrendered souls as Vasudeva and Devaki, we probably would have secretly went to some other kingdom and then had a baby. Or else, you know, Vasudeva and Devaki were not attached to anything. They could have just become Brahmacharini and Brahmachari living at home. Yes, what do, you know, they could have become Brahmachari Grihastas and not have babies. Some people do like that. It's a distraction. Now, this is really a distraction. Some people think not having babies, you know, you're freed from the distraction of the crying and all the stools and urines and all that stuff. But this distraction means you're going to be, the baby's going to be killed. So they had a baby. And incredibly, Vasudev brought this baby right to Kamsa and said, here, I promised you. Now, even though Kamsa knew he would do it, still he was astonished. You're giving me your firstborn male son, knowing that I'm going to kill it, and you came here and gave it to me? You could have hid it. You know, in the Bible, what was it? When Moses was born, they put him in a little basket and threw him, just floated him down the Nile River so he wouldn't be killed. But he gave the baby to Kamsa. Kamsa said, "You are just such a pious and honest person. Take this child back, and I'll just the eighth child. Bring that one." But Vasudev knew that this was not going to last because Kamsa was too much attached to his ego. We cannot trust somebody who has too deep material attachments. Real trust is when somebody, you know, under any situation, they're going to have integrity. And then, inconceivably, according to Krishna's divine arrangement, Narada Muni happens to visit Kamsa. Yes? Narada Muni knows exactly what's Krishna's will. And Krishna's will has so many layers and so many dimensions and so many perspectives and from so many different angles of vision. He's trying to accomplish so many different purposes all at the same time. And Krishna has an infinite intelligence. He has infinite knowledge of everything and everyone. He knows past, present, and future. And besides all that, he's infinitely merciful. And he has an infinite sense of humor. And a lot of times he manifests all of these different qualities through a devotee like Narada. And yet, you know, little you and me, we want to think, I know what Krishna wants. You know, we have from one little tiny, from our perspective, you know, sitting in a little room in Bombay. Yes, absolute, I know what Krishna wants. Okay. Krishna's listening to you from within your heart. So what happens now is Narada Muni comes in the house and he says to Kamsa, first Kamsa, because he knows he's going to get some pious deeds that's going to protect his material attachments and obsession for power. Kamsa has already imprisoned Ugrasena, his own father, so that he can assume the entire kingdom for himself. What kind of a nonsense person? But this tendency is in all of us. We see to what degree the human ego can be degraded if we just are inattentive and let it go that way. It happens all the time, even within the world around us today. The only difference is people just aren't as powerful as Kamsa. He imprisons his own father. Meanwhile, Narada Muni tells him, after Kamsa greets Narada Muni and gives him honor and respect, thinking that that's what will help him to maintain his power and prestige. And actually, if you read Hiranyakashipu's prayers to Lord Brahma, and if you see Narada's Kamsa's respect to Narada, you see how people who are really, really selfish and demoniac can be extraordinarily religious in the sense of, you know, doing the right pujas and the right mudras and the right prayers and the right respect, but they have the wrong motives. So after Kamsa offers honors to Narada, Narada gives him a little philosophy. And then he says, according to Harivamsa, Prabhupada quotes it, he says, actually, Kamsa, I was just traveling around the universe. And I just want to inform you of what I heard. That the devas, your enemies, are going to be taking birth in the Yadu and the Vrishni dynasty, and the Supreme Lord is coming. They could come as any of these children in this dynasty. Krishna's coming. He could come any time. Your enemies could be any of these children. And by the way, in your past life, your name was Kalanimi, and Vishnu killed you, and he's coming back to kill you again. So, and played his veena and left. He knew exactly how Kamsa would respond to that. He immediately called his guards. They dragged Devaki and Vasudev, threw them in a prison, shackled them in iron chains, and kept them as prisoners. And every time Devaki and Vasudev gave birth to a child, Kamsa would come down and slaughter it right in front of Vasudev and Devaki. Mercilessly. He would sometimes just take the little infant, little baby, by the tender little feet and dash him against a stone again and again and again until the baby was just... I don't want to give an improper example. But it was just crushed and bloodied. Vasudeva and Devaki loved their children. Six children. Of course, Narada knew that these were six great sages, the sons of Marici, who actually really wanted to die so that they could go back to their abode, because they were cursed to take this death. They were cursed to become born in this world. Anyways, the seventh child we know is Ananta, who was transferred from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini, and he was born as Balaramji in Gokul. And then Devaki became pregnant with Krishna. How did it happen? Krishna appeared within the heart of Vasudev, and just like the sun casts its light on the rising moon, from the heart of Vasudev, Krishna transferred himself by his own sweet will to the heart of Devaki. And when she became pregnant with Krishna, she became so beautiful, so effulgent. Kamsa knew this is the child, the eighth son. And he had his guards surrounding that prison cell with the order, the moment that this child is born, tell me. And he was just in excruciating anguish and anxiety. Very interesting. He had everything he wanted except happiness. He had the biggest, most powerful armies in the planet. He had the greatest wealth of anyone in the planet. He had the greatest power and prestige as anyone in the planet. Anything he said, people would do out of fear. He had no opposition. He had made alliances with Jarasandha and other such powerful kings. They had everything. But there was no happiness. He was always in anxiety. He was always fearing death. 24 hours a day, he could hardly sleep at night because he was just horrified by the idea of death. That all that he had gained would be taken away. And Vasudev and Devaki, they're down there in this prison cell, just living their lives. They can't go on any vacations. They were in one room the whole time, with chains, for about 8 years at least. And the demigods were coming and offering prayers to the Lord. And on this most auspicious moment of midnight, Krishna. Devaki didn't have any labor pains. Of course, 8 years in prison is a lot more worse than a labor pain. But to speak of seeing six of her children butchered before her eyes. But then Krishna just came out from her womb and manifest himself in the air in his form of Vishnu with four arms, with a golden crown, the Kastuba Mani, the most precious of all jewels, around his neck. Gold and rubies and sapphires and chintamani gems on his the bracelets around his arms and his wrists and his ankles, and a magnificent dhoti that was golden, like the bright as the flashing of lightning. And he gazed down at Vasudev and Devaki, with his forearms holding the conch shell and the Sudarshan chakra and the lotus flower, and the club. Not an ordinary baby. And Vasudev and Devaki looked up, and Vasudev is totally struck with wonder. That's where we find us in this verse today. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who Prabhupada is quoting, is explaining the various reasons why Vasudev was so much amazed. He was astounded. He was in transcendental ecstasy. All of his limbs were shivering, trembling in ecstasy. All that he had gone through was a very small token of austerity for this moment, of literally seeing the supreme eternal personality of Godhead face to face. And Lord Krishna was smiling upon him. And Vasudev, here is my worshipable Lord. And he's come as my own son. And how is it? He's a little baby dressed with such jewels and such silks in this prison. And what's most emphasized in this particular verse is how Vasudev wanted to celebrate the birth of Krishna as his child. Now, what kind of celebration do you do when it's just you and your wife in a prison cell? They had shackles on their feet. They couldn't even dance. But when there's love and devotion, there cannot be any restriction. On the material level, there's always restrictions. But in bhakti, because bhakti is unlimited, there is no restrictions in how we are facilitated to offer our love to Krishna. We've seen many great personalities, even in their old age, when they can't walk and they can't move, but there's no reason, it's not an impediment to their devotional service. Srila Prabhupada was always reminding us of this. The only impediment for our devotional service is our own willingness to serve. Other than that, Krishna does not accept the thing. Krishna accepts, Prabhupada says, the intent, the purpose in which it is offered. That is what is all important. We read in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Puri, Shivananda Sen would invite him for prasad. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so obliged to Shivananda Sen, because Shivananda Sen, he gave his heart, soul, life, everything to serve the devotees. He was totally selfless in his service. Every year, 200 to 400 devotees would come all the way to Puri by foot, and he would arrange all the meals, all the accommodations, pay all the taxes. He arranged in such a way that he was the only one who suffered inconvenience, and everyone else just was happy. Any inconvenience that would have been to anyone, he took it upon himself, so that they could just chant and dance all the way to Puri. But Bhaktivinoda Tagore, he prayed that the greatest happiness is the sufferings I endure to please you, my Lord. And taking that on a very deep level, Lord Chaitanya taught Das Das Anudas to take on suffering to serve devotees or even conditioned souls is the greatest happiness for a Vaishnava. There's a whole different perspective of what happiness is. And when we just catch this, then we could be happy. It's so easy. But it's not so easy. You're laughing because it makes sense, I think. As long as we're thinking that our happiness is what I can get, you can never be happy. Because Kamsa was getting everything, but he was never happy. But when we just change our whole perspective and understand my happiness is how I can give, how I could serve Krishna, how I could serve the Vaishnavas, how I could give Krishna to the people of the world. That's my happiness. And all that really is required is that we want to do that and we do what we can. Shivananda Sen, not only did he serve all the devotees, but we all know that famous story about the stray dog that happened to join his party. It wasn't a pedigree poodle that he got attached to for being so fluffy and cute and all that stuff. He was just a stray dog, Indian dog. He In those days, they weren't importing these rare breeds to India like they do now. He was just a stray Indian dog. And he just started walking with the devotees. And Shivananda Sen was, he was so much compassionate that I have to bring this dog to Lord Chaitanya. By any means, I have to bring this dog to Lord Chaitanya. This dog will be delivered if he just gets Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And he arranged special prasad, because the dog, I guess, didn't like what the devotees were eating, so he had a special cook for the dog. Can you imagine? What a detail. He's arranging all the accommodations, everything for all these 400 people going for weeks and weeks, and he has special arrangements for this dog. He's paying special tolls to get him across rivers on boats where no dogs are allowed. He was going to great length without neglecting anyone. So Lord Chaitanya was so overwhelmed with Shivananda Sen. He said, I am your own son. Your family is my family. And anytime Shivananda Sen invited Lord Chaitanya for prasad, Lord Chaitanya would come. And anything Shivananda Sen cooked, Lord Chaitanya ate. And he ate so much of what Shivananda Sen cooked. It was all prasad with ghee and spices. He overate. Now, it's not possible for Krishna to overeat. But yet, if he wants to overeat, he does. This is the inconceivable nature of Krishna. Krishna can eat all that thousands of tons of bhoga that Nanda Maharaj and all the Brahmins and all the Brijavasis offered to Govardhan Hill, he just, within a moment, he ate it all. And he wanted more. And we already saw how Lord Chaitanya, you know, at another time, he ate a whole room full of prasad within a few minutes. Well, he's unlimited. How could someone who's unlimited overeat and get indigestion in the process? But for the sake of loving reciprocation, he did. And the son of Shivananda Sen understood Lord Chaitanya's difficulty. So the next day he told Lord Chaitanya, He and the son of Shivananda Sen invited Lord Chaitanya, and he just had some dahi with some medicinal spices mixed in it, and some ginger and lemon, and really bitter digestive stuff. Black pepper and all that. And Lord Chaitanya was in ecstasy eating it. Now, none of the stuff tasted good, but because of the intention to please the Lord, it was as good as the feast that Nanda Maharaj offered him at Govardhan. Some digestive aids. Because the Lord sees the content, and that's what he accepted. That's what gives him happiness. So Vasudev, he knew this completely. No restriction. Here he is, in prison, absolutely in poverty. He had nothing. Everything was taken away. But for the pleasure of Krishna, who is shining before him in the air, right before his eyes, Vasudev started offering in his mind millions and millions of cows to Brahmins. Each cow we can understand, you know, had golden horns and silver hoods and jeweled necklaces and pearls and silks and all these things. He's just giving them away, giving them. And for Krishna's perspective, it was an utsav, mahotsav. The story is so important. Because where there's love, where there's devotion, where there's a sincere desire to serve, there is no possible impediment in all of Brahma's creation. Physically, there is. If we have the right intent, there's no possibility of failing in doing anything in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, he started a temple in Jhansi, and it was all taken away. But we have a nice connection with that story. Because the temple that we're sitting in was Krishna's transcendental reciprocation to that activity. If you want to know the details, you can ask the people who... Because it was... The governor at the time was K.M. Munshi, yes? And his wife wanted to get that premise for her own purposes. So the people who owned that facility, they had a choice. Either let this stay within this totally unknown, apparently poverty-stricken Swami, or give it to the wife of the governor. Which would you do? I know what you would do. But she didn't know who Prabhupada was. So they gave to the... And Prabhupada was left out with nothing. Yes? Anyways, we happen to be on K.M. Munshi Marg. And this used to belong, this whole property used to belong under the custody of that organization until Srinathji Prabhu was relaxing in the back of the temple there. Mahaprabhu and others, they just gave it to somehow or other. It came into their hands and it came to Krishna. But did Prabhupada fail there? Absolutely. No. Because failure and success is only in regard to how we please Krishna. The material, physical manifestations of this world are not really that important. This is the very basis of the Gita. Krishna tells Arjuna, whether you win or lose doesn't matter. That you fight for me is all that matters. If you fight for me, you are supremely victorious, even if you lose the battle. You just have to try to win, that's all. Try to win with the right intent of pure devotion. That's what the Gita teaches. We're not attached to the results. We're attached to the service. So yes, this was one of the most glorious mahotsavas. Vasudev, he was just creating an incredible festival with all the decorations of a festival in his mind. And Krishna was seeing that. And he was in ecstasy. He was happy. Why was he in ecstasy? Because Krishna was accepting what he was offering and reciprocating with him. Narasingha Nanda Brahmachari was a poverty-stricken brahmachari. from a material perspective, being a brahmachari is something like being in a prison. Yes.
As far as you don't really have anything except your devotion. At least you're not supposed to.
So Nrsingananda Brahmachari, he decided, I want to landscape all the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kilometers from Navadvip, Kuliagram, all the way to Vrindavan. I'm going to landscape everything. Now we have our little project in Wada, Govardhan, and how much difficulty is to landscape. Because landscaping is not so difficult, but dealing with landscapers is very difficult. For that, you can discuss with Gauranga. But it's very landscaping, you know, Indian countryside, you know, there's jungles. And there's deserts and all kinds of stuff. And here he is. He's landscaping. He's creating beautiful lakes. And he's putting swans, not just ordinary swans, but really nice swans, singing swans in the lakes. And magnificent lotus flowers of all colors emitting such intoxicating fragrances. And he paved the road with jewels. Find a landscaper who could do this. And it's not that as Lord Chaitanya was walking, all of a sudden there was, road under construction. Some detour through a congested little neighborhood with traffic jams so that, you know, he could, the construction's temporary inconvenience. Everything was done. He paved it with rubies and emeralds and diamonds. And then after doing that, he took flower petals without a single stem, only the petal, and cover the whole world with all these jewels with a thick blanket. And all the jewels were perfectly smooth. It wasn't like all different shapes. It was totally smooth. Then a very nice blanket of fresh, fragrant flower petals, and Lord Chaitanya was dancing and singing, and he was putting banyan trees, not, you know, just new ones that, you know, Lord Chaitanya just saw some little thing with a fence around it. It was struggling to grow. He was putting 500-year-old banyan trees. He was getting kadamba trees that didn't even grow in that area, and, you know, 1,000-year-old kadamba trees, and he was putting in, and they were all filled with flowers and fruits. What landscaper could do that? Nrsingananda Brahmachari. He was doing it in his mind. And Lord Chaitanya, as he was walking, the only thing he saw was what was in Nrsingananda Brahmachari's mind. He was smelling, he was tasting, he was seeing whatever Nrsingananda Brahmachari was doing. And he was just sitting on this, Nrsingananda Brahmachari was just sitting on a roadside, like this. Because the Lord is bhavagrahi. That means he accepts the essence of our love. That's all. And this can make us fearless. in any situation. Because in this material world, the reality, padam padam yad vipadam datesham, nothing can change that. From a physical perspective, there is danger at every step, whoever we are. Srila Prabhupada says there are accidents even on the king's royal roads. We see even multi-billionaires with such fame and such power is happening every day. But they die an early death. Billionaires, with all their money, with all their power, with all their influence, trying to cure a disease, but they can't. They die in the 50s. And I've seen people in the ghettos of Bombay who live in a little shanty house and just drink sewage water. And they live till 95 years old. The world is such a difficult place to really understand if we're trying to understand it with our senses. But the reality is, padam padam yadvi padam natesham, whoever we are, wherever we are, danger can strike us in so many ways at any moment. There are literally, practically infinite ways that we can suffer in any situation. From within, from without. So where's the security here? You can have the best insurance policy. Yes, who was it? Jayadratha. He had the entire Kuru army surrounding him to protect him from Arjuna. It was impossible for Arjuna to get to him. But Arjuna got to him. There's no way to protect ourselves in this world. But the soul's eternal. And the most beautiful thing is, if we just have a desire to serve, a desire to express our love for Krishna, there is no impediment in this world that can possibly come between us and Krishna. Impossible. Because sincerity of devotion transcends all limitations. And when we have this sincerity, Krishna reciprocates by letting us know that he's accepting our offering. And that's really all that matters. That's our happiness. That's our eternal life. That's our eternal fulfillment. Because that's all we want. So here, the actual meaning of true happiness is being revealed. To have a Mahotsav, a wonderful festival for the pleasure of Krishna, through the sincerity of our devotion. Where all material impediments only serve to intensify our offering of love and devotion. Not only did Krishna appear to Vasudev in the prison house, but through Vasudev's heart, he appeared to deliver the whole world. So we should not be afraid of impediments, whatever they may be. We should just fix our minds and fix our hearts on the prayer that let my happiness be your happiness, Krishna. And then we become transcendental. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught us that we can access that Krishna within our heart. We can access that devotion within our heart that is transcendental to birth and death and all the dualities in between. All that's required is with a humble and sincere heart, we learn to cry out Krishna's holy name. Questions? Yes, Mahaprabhu.
What did you say?
Govinda just left, so that's an indication that this is going to be a very special question.
Actually, this question bothering me for a long time, but I was thinking how to ask the question which is not connected with the class. But finally I found thrice you have mentioned certain things. On that basis I will put my question, because you Maharaj said very clearly several times that bhakti there is no restriction provided there is willingness to serve. Now there is willingness to chant, but when we are chanting our japa, at that time, though there is no material desire that I want to earn money and I want to do something different, but several things, like without mentioning the name, some very serious problem of a counsel will come in the mind. And that disturbs chanting. So, and this is not a, every time bringing mind back and again chanting, and then as well, few word of Mahamantra we can chant, and again mind is going somewhere else, and that thing is not our some material management thing or family thing or sense gratification thing. Now, how to solve that problem, which I am facing very seriously? When you say bhakti, there is no restriction, but there must be willingness to serve.
You are asking about the anxiety of helping a counselee. That anxiety is place is if your anxiety is actually to help and to serve a person to come closer to Krishna, to overcome their impediments, then that anxiety is devotional service. Krishna is very happy to see your anxiety. So go on, keep trying to chant, because by focusing on the holy name, it can empower you to actually invoke Krishna's grace upon that person. But that anxiety is pleasing to Krishna, because it's an anxiety of compassion. So it's not really such a distraction from chanting.
because it's a spirit of compassion. So don't hurt yourself with guilt. You should be happy that Krishna has given you that spirit of compassion. At the same time, you have to keep trying to bring your mind back to the holy name. You should know that by really taking shelter of Krishna, you can be most empowered to be an instrument of compassion to help that person. When you're feeling that anxiety of compassion, it should inspire you to go deeper into the holy name so that you could actually do something to help that person in a very powerful way. So these are good distractions. Because I hate to say this, but for many people, if you don't have that anxiety while distracting you from your chanting, you're going to have something much less transcendental. So until we're very advanced and pure, we're going to get distracted. And we have to keep bringing our mind back to the holy name, back to the holy name. That's the practice of sadhana. Yes? So all of us, we have distractions and we keep bringing it back and bringing mind back to the holy name of Krishna. But what a wonderful gift of Krishna that your distraction is being an instrument of his compassion. Because if you didn't have that distraction, then it would be toward so many selfish, maybe even unmentionable things. So be grateful. Does that answer your question? Yes. We're getting all the... I've been preparing for the two of you for 6 months.
Speaking about selfless service, when a devotee is doing any selfless service, the nectar which he releases, that is so nectarian, and he wanted to serve more and more in a selfless way, and he feels it that is the goal of life. More and more a devotee spends his time in doing a selfless service, then he understands the goal of life is to go and do more and more selfless, and this is what Krishna and Guru Maharaj wants it. But then there is one fear in a devotee's mind that there will be one stage that will come in his life that he won't be able to do service due to some physical constraint or due to the bodily doesn't give support, or a stage comes where he'll not be able to do service. At that time, he has that fear that the nectar which he is relishing right now because of doing that selfless service, because he's not reciprocating that service with Krishna, he won't be able to get that. At that time, when he'll not be able to do that service, he really wanted to see that nectar is not been sacrificed at any cost. How to see to it that at that time, when that stage comes, he doesn't compromise that nectar which he's relishing when he's doing right now?
Spoken in the words of a true investment consultant. If we become attached to the physical thing that we do in the name of devotional service, that can also be a selfish thing. Sometimes people think this is my service, and
if that service is given to someone else, then we become distressed. We become sometimes offensive because this is my service. That's just ego. Service is for the pleasure of Krishna. It's not for, it's not my service. It's Krishna's service. Yes? So yes, there are many things that we're doing now that we're not going to be able to do if we are blessed with a long enough life to get old. Yes? Because whatever service you're doing, if Pakistan shoots a bomb over here, you may not be able to do that service tomorrow. We may not have this temple. We may not have this body. We may not have any of our family members. All these things are vulnerable. In fact, it is for certain that all these things are going to be lost by the power of time. So if there's one thing you can know for sure, is that everything's going to be taken away. There's no doubt about that. But the soul is eternal, and our relationship with Krishna is eternal. And there is no impediment to our pleasing and serving Krishna, because that's a matter of our love. When our devotion actually comes to the level of love, then yes, when we get old, we may want to do those things that we used to do. But in the process of wanting, it only increases our love. And Krishna accepts, even in that separation. So the reason we're doing our service now is to develop that love. We try to do whatever we do as expertly as possible, because that's the way we express our love. But that love cannot be impeded by any material circumstance. Madhavendra Puri, he was walking around the whole of India for years and years and years. And the last part of his life, he couldn't walk, couldn't even stand up. He was just crying out for Krishna. Yes? Couldn't even stand up. He was just crying out for Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya said, that was the ultimate state of perfection. Now try to tell a materialist that the ultimate state of perfection is when you can't even stand up. You can't even move. You're so old and you're so emaciated that somebody has to... It's very embarrassing when somebody has to clean your urine and stool from your body, isn't it? But that was the ultimate perfection, because he was crying for Krishna with love in that situation. And that's why we're doing all our devotional service, so that we could cry for Krishna with love. So we should have nothing to fear about getting old. We should have nothing to fear about dying. We should only fear that our ego distracts us away from pure devotional service. That's really our only fear. Does that answer your question?
Maharaj, this fear always used to be there, that even if you are doing selfless, trying to do selfless service, yet we feel it, that Krishna is so pleased, but still that false ego is not going. So that means Krishna is still not pleased with us.
It's going. Just the fact that you're
so emotional about wanting it to go means it's going. Thank you. You are giving good example. Devamrita Maharaj, would you like to add something to this question? Can we send the microphone over to Maharaji? The question was that we're doing devotional service, but we're going to get old and we're not going to be able to do any of the things that we're doing now, and that's fearful.
I think you answered the question perfectly. Things? Krishna's already having everything. He's wants to taste our attitude. Bhakti is all about attitude. In material life, they say that, especially in the business world, your attitude is very important. We want to see how dedicated you are to the corporation. But the bottom line is always things. Money, acquisitions. But in spiritual life, Krishna already has all the things, but it's the love of the devotee that can even conquer Krishna, as demonstrated in Damodar Leela. Mother Yashoda doesn't actually control Krishna. Her love controls Krishna. So Krishna agrees to be conquered by that attitude of the devotee, which gradually thickens into love. So whether you're young or old, Krishna is looking at the intent, the dedication. Dedication is part of intent. The effort to constantly call out to Krishna. The daily effort put in to chant Krishna's name with quality. Sometimes I wonder, we think Krishna is some kind of, well, so to speak, heartless person, that he doesn't notice his devotees trying to hear his name, that he doesn't know the devotees' intentions and their efforts to serve him. I don't know how we get this idea, except that perhaps we are applying material experience of heartlessness and insensitivity and callousness. We're going to apply that to Krishna. Of course, in Vrindavan Leela, the gopis did pose that question to Krishna. They were transcendentally upset why Krishna left. Today is, what's the day today? Yes, all right.
Hari, show no material impediments. We're celebrating Sharad Purnima when it's not Sharad Purnima.
But it's the intent.
We're celebrating full moon when it's not even a full moon. It's no material impediments. We're having a mahotsav.
So the gopis, they posed a question to Krishna once he reappeared on the bank of the Jamuna, sitting on their shawls. The Shastra describes that Krishna, even the greatest yogis would like to have Krishna, they would like to have darshan of Krishna seated in their heart. And that same Krishna is sitting on the shawls of the gopis on the bank of the Jamuna River. And so while massaging Krishna's feet, they're staring into his eyes, and there's some apparent, don't want to use the word anger, but they were a little upset. Krishna, in other words, how could you treat us like this? So they asked those famous questions about the types of relationships, to make it short. And Krishna gave his famous explanation of his modus operandi. In other words, Krishna said, I know what I'm doing. I'm acting in such a way as to increase the love of my devotees, because I know the psychology that when you strive so hard to get something and then you lose it, you never stop thinking of what you lost. So he told the gopis, don't think for a moment I was away from you. While you were going through the agony of separation, I was watching. In our own small progressive attempts to serve Krishna, we can remember that, as Maharaj said, Krishna's bhavagrahi. He knows how to focus in on the emotional state of service that the devotee is offering to him. So whether one is young or old, these material considerations have no import. Simply, whether one is young or old, one is trying one's best to serve Krishna. And that attitude, which gradually becomes bhava, that attitude is what Krishna is watching for. So even when there's apparently some service to Krishna that is a material failure, Krishna can be relishing that beyond what we can conceive of or calculate. Even something seems to not turn out right from the material point of view. Just like in Ram Lila, Jatayu failed. He couldn't stop Ravana. Yet his service so pleased Lord Ram. The reality of bhakti is the most wonderful and exotic dimension. And it has nothing to do with material circumstances. Material circumstances simply provide the setting for our attitude of service to Krishna. The material circumstances all belong to Krishna anyway. So why do we think it's my youth? What will happen when I lose my youth? Then it'll become my old age. That I don't want. It's my youth, but when I get old, then I will serve Krishna. I'll offer the old age to Krishna. But it's neither your youth nor your old age. It's not your body and not your mind. Those are my ineffective words. Thank you, Maharaj, for seeking to engage me in some service.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.